This is the Virginia Podcasting Network. On August 9th, incumbent Republican Virgil Goode and Democratic challenger Al Weed met for the first time before voters in the race for the 5th Congressional District. Independent Green candidate Joseph Otto was not invited to speak despite being on the ballot. The event was sponsored by the Senior Statesmen of Virginia and held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Not strictly a debate, both candidates had 15 minutes to give an opening statement and then had 5 additional minutes to rebut. Then they took questions from the audience. The event is moderated by Fred Terry of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to this nice facility for our seniors, and we are, like you all, we are guests here too, our Senior Statesmen of Virginia. Don has pointed out what our objectives are, and simply it is to educate ourselves, us and our friends that visit us for our various meetings once a month, is to educate ourselves so we can vote with intelligence. The best thing that American democracy can have is an intelligent voting population, an active voting population. The program has been already touched on. It'll be led off with Mr. Al Weed, a 15-minute speech, with Virgil Goode second. Then any of the subjects covered in those 15-minute speech, Mr. Weed will be able to comment on that for 5 minutes, and also the 5 minutes for Mr. Goode. At this time, it gives me great pleasure in presenting our two men, Mr. Weed and the Honorable Virgil Goode, from Franklin County, and Mr. Weed from my county and Nelson County. Mr. Weed will lead off with a 15-minute talk of his ideals and explaining what he stands for, and then will come Mr. Goode, and then after that, Mr. Weed will have 5 minutes to comment on any subjects that was in the opponent's speech. Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Fred, and thank you for both the senior statesmen and the senior citizens organization that make this possible. Democracy depends on a lot of moving parts. You all know that. It's not just organizations such as this that have brought us together. It is the press that covers these campaigns. It is the media that takes the time to come out. It is the campaign workers who get the word out. This is what democracy is all about. But fundamentally, both Virgil and I are blessed by having wonderful wives. I'll let Virgil speak to Lucy, but I just want to recognize my wife of 40 years, who I know I couldn't do this without her, and we will actually be celebrating our 40th anniversary one or two or sometime before the election. I know when the election is, but I'm never quite sure when my anniversary is. I don't usually get away with that if I'm right up close to her, but... This election is based on one thing, trust. Your trust has been betrayed by our government. I am running for Congress because I know that we can make change. Our government must protect America and its place in the world. Our government must provide the security we need to raise our families in peace. And above all, our government must be a partner for those who struggle for the American dream. I have had to work hard all my life and have learned many lessons. My father died when I was young, and my family couldn't afford to send me to college. I put myself through Yale and Princeton on scholarships and on the GI Bill. I volunteered for active duty and fought in Vietnam as a Green Beret. In 2002, I retired from the military after 42 years. Service to this country is the core of my being. In 1973, I started my family farm in Nelson County. It has been over 3 decades of hard work and sacrifice, but I have made a good life for my family and me. Today, my daughter is a school teacher, and my son is an Army surgeon on his way back to Iraq. I am proud of my achievements, but they didn't come easy. People today are just as dedicated and are working just as hard, but we find our goals impossible to reach. Rising health care costs, rising gas prices, lower wages, and fewer job opportunities are squeezing the middle class. This is not the America I grew up in. This is not the America I want for my grandchildren. I believe in a government that works for the people who are working for their families, not against them. But that is not the government we have today. Our government is in crisis. The Republican-controlled Congress is allowing the president to get away with just about everything. They have neglected their fundamental constitutional duties while George Bush strips away our civil liberties one by one. Karl Rove politics have robbed the voters by manipulating the emotions around cultural issues while ignoring the hard work of dealing with public policy. Why won't they talk about record deficits and reckless government spending? Why won't they talk about corruption and scandal at every level of the federal government? And why won't they talk truthfully about the failed occupation in Iraq? Republicans in Washington have been blindly following George Bush's lead. Because of this, we are less secure. Does anyone really believe that having our military tied down in an occupation and civil war in Iraq protects us from terrorist attacks? The war on terror is and has always been in Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden is free. North Korea is testing missiles, and Iran is a growing threat. Violence between Israel and Lebanon is increasing daily. Iraq is for future presidents, Mr. Bush has said. Are we going to let them get away with this? George Bush and the Republicans have also failed us at home. They failed to help the citizens of the Gulf Coast last year. Are they better prepared for the next hurricane? Are they prepared for a bird flu pandemic? George Bush and the Republicans have disregarded science and technology. We must address the reality of global warming, and we must aggressively pursue cures for every disease we can. The crisis of our government is out of control, but let's be clear. It is not just a problem out there. It is not just a problem in Washington, Texas, and California. It is very much in our district. My opponent, Mr. Good, follows the Republican lead at every turn. When asked about the important issues of this election, he says the Second Amendment and immigration. While those are topics worthy of notice, are they really the critical issues affecting our children's future? Of course not. Mr. Good has spent the last 33 years lulling us to sleep, but this year the alarm has sounded. You should be able to trust the Virgil you think you know here. You should be able to trust that he is the same man who goes to Congress. He is not. You should be able to trust that the Virgil who gave money to your local volunteer fire and rescue crews is a man who goes to Congress and stands up to George Bush. He is not. Mr. Good has voted alongside George Bush over 80% of the time. You should be able to trust that the Virgil who shows up at every county fair is a man who goes to Congress and asks hard questions about the occupation of Iraq. He is not. Mr. Good has voted to take money away from Social Security, from education, from care for our veterans, in order to pay billions of dollars for the failed occupation of Iraq. He's never asked a single question, never a word of debate. You should be able to trust that the Virgil who shakes your hand and gives you that pencil is a man who goes to Congress to fight for you and your neighbors. He is not. Mr. Good took nearly $100,000 in illegal contributions from a now-convicted felon and in return got that man $15 million for a useless Pentagon contract. $15 million that could have bought proper body armor for our troops in Iraq. But he didn't stop there. Mr. Good sold out the taxpayers of Martinsville. Now that the felon is in jail, the Pentagon has terminated the contract, and the taxpayers of Martinsville may owe up to $500,000. We deserve better. We deserve better than a congressman who represents grasping special interests while ignoring the hardworking people of our district. We deserve a congressman who has the courage to tackle the issues that affect our lives, not just inflame the controversial issues that divide us. I believe we deserve a congressman who will provide leadership and vision, not just useless headline-grabbing Band-Aids. Don't you? Many in our district are working hard to make our community stronger. They are doing this on their own, and some are succeeding. But we cannot count on government to do its part. When we work together, when the government becomes the partner we deserve, our district will thrive. Our children will grow up and stay in solid moral communities. We need a new kind of representative in Washington. We need someone who is not a career politician, someone who knows what it means to pay bills, save for the future, work hard for family, and live a life of sacrifice. Mr. Good was born into a wealthy family and has been a politician his entire adult life. Does the cost of gasoline hurt him? Does the cost of health care hurt him? Does the low minimum wage hurt him? I believe we need a representative who understands that we need real solutions, who understands the hard work and vision it is going to take to climb the hill in front of us. Mr. Good claims his earmarks have helped our district. He got $15 million for Mitchell Wade and MZM, but only $250,000 for the new college institute. He got $6 million for a bridge, but only $25,000 for Bedford County Sheriff's Office. And he got $180,000 for his wife and press secretary, but only $50,000 for a law enforcement training program. Earmarks are not leadership. They are only buckets under our leaky roof. I believe we can do better than this, don't you? The singular most important issue in this election is jobs. Listen to the headlines. Danville Register and B, bittersweet payday. Former Dan River employees gather for their last paychecks. Gazette Virginian, descanned end production, displace around 80 workers. The Gazette Virginian again, boy, they're taking it hard in Halifax. O'Sullivan to close doors, move will affect 200 workers. And in the news in advance, Dan River to close Brookneal plant, 280 jobs could be lost. Free trade has benefited the wealthy CEO and millionaire investors, but we here have paid the cost. When NAFTA was passed, the government knew our region would be impacted. They said they were going to be partners in rebuilding our economies. They asked us to trust them. They have betrayed that trust. It is as if the government said, we're going to build a new highway through your neighborhood and tear down your house. But don't worry, we'll build you a new one. Well, the highway's here, but where's the house? With an uncertain future for our region, too many young people are leaving. We can't let this be. I promise to work tirelessly in Congress for our region. I promise to work for more jobs, better wages, and affordable health care. With vision and good government, we can have the partner we were promised. We can build our communities for a better future. The first step is to increase the federal minimum wage and make all jobs viable for those willing to work. To work 40 hours a week and only make $200 is unfair. I am embarrassed that we ask Americans to work for our economy, but do not allow them to share the benefits. When we increase the minimum wage to a real living wage, then all will be able to support themselves and their families. We can create more jobs and stimulate our local economy with federal programs already in place. 11 of the 22 counties and cities in our district are designated as hub zones. These areas receive preference for federal contracts. We must encourage our small businesses to take advantage of this program. But we can do even better than that. We can refocus programs for regions like ours through legislation so that we can direct funds to those areas impacted by free trade. For generations, much of our region's culture and economy revolved around tobacco. It was a prosperous and lively age. The age of tobacco is over. Some farms are surviving and even increasing planted acreage. But the heart of our agricultural community is hurting. What's next? The answer is biofuels. With climbing gas prices and dependency on foreign oil, a national security crisis, the need for homegrown fuels is greater than ever. Virginia's family farms can be a leader in this industry. Researchers have been looking into alternative fuels for decades. Now is the time to apply that research in our fields. In 10 years, we can have ethanol refineries across Southside and create thousands of quality, high-paying jobs that will never go overseas. Congress must step in and provide incentives to farmers while helping to build pilot plants. It is the patriotic thing to do. 33 years ago, I capitalized on the agricultural opportunity in grapes and wine. I will lead a similar effort for biofuels. I know our farmers are ready, and I will work tirelessly in Congress for our country and for our rural communities. There are many issues which undermine the middle class, but none is as dramatic as the cost of health care. Too many struggle to pay exorbitant fees. A national health insurance system will provide all Americans with access to efficient and affordable health care while improving our economy. When you get sick, you should be able to see a doctor. It's that simple. Over 1 million Virginians are uninsured, and 3/4 of these work full-time or live with someone who does. We can do better than this. Many in our district are working hard, raising their children right, going to church, paying taxes, and doing all the things we encourage as a society. They should be valued and supported by our government. Instead, government today is working against the middle class. Gas prices are rising, health care costs are rising, and wages are staying low. We can change this and make America work again for all of us. Mr. Good has claimed to work for the working middle class in our district. He has claimed to bring jobs and better wages. Where's the beef, Mr. Good? Since nearly 1996, when he took office as our congressman, nearly 7,000 jobs have left Southside. And for those who are working, their wages are lacking farther and farther behind. In 1973, the year I started my farm, was the same year that Mr. Good became a politician. In the 33 years since then, over 100 new farm wineries have opened up, and that industry brings in over $100 million to our economy each year. I organize farmers and work with the Commonwealth to create jobs and strengthen the economies. Whose record do you trust? My vision has paid off for the Commonwealth, and that is what I will take to Congress. My opponent is nothing more than a political opportunist. He votes with George Bush 80% of the time to receive the favor of the White House. He votes with the House Republicans and against our needs 97% of the time just to keep his ability to earmark. He supports wealthy contributors like Mitchell Wade, regardless of the cost. I believe we deserve a representative who is not cowed by Karl Rove and the president. I believe we deserve a representative who is not cravenly beholden to his party. I believe we deserve a representative who is not afraid to stand up to special interest. Don't you?
I want to first thank everyone for being here, for participating in democracy. Having forums and showcases and debates give everyone an opportunity to see the candidates and to respond to questions. I want to thank Fred Terry, Gene Smith, and all of those affiliated with the Senior Statesman of Virginia for their hosting this event, not only this year, but every year. 2004, I remember the forum up at the library, and I want to thank you for that. In 2002, the debate with Meredith Richards, I want to thank you for that. And I'm not sure whether we had one in 2000 with John Boyd. I can't recall that. I do want to set the record real clear on one thing, and that is Mr. Joe Otto. I had no objection to Mr. Otto, who got up enough petitions to qualify for the ballot. And I would suggest to all who want to hold forums and to candidate Weed that there could be some Federal Election Commission problems by excluding somebody that's duly qualified on the ballot or anybody that's running as a third-party candidate. I participated in a forum in Hampton, Sydney, a few elections ago, and a third-party candidate was excluded, and I got a letter from a Federal Election Commission, and I had nothing to do with the deciding who came, and my wife and I answered a lot of questions. And so I suggest to all holders and to Mr. Weed that it's, I believe, the appropriate course of action to certainly include all of those that have duly qualified, that have gone out and gotten petitions and qualified for the ballot. I'm not as dire on America as Mr. Weed. I believe America was great. I believe America is great, and America will be great. Mr. Weed says, I voted with President Bush 80% of the time. You know, you could take all the votes up there in Congress and calculate them any way you want to. I guarantee you someone else could look at those same votes and say he voted with George Bush half of the time. I can, on things that I agree with the president, I vote with him. On things that I agree with the Republican conference, I vote with them. And I will tell you this, between the Republican conference and the very left agenda of the majority in the Democratic caucus, I do agree with the Republican conference and don't make an apology for that. But let me just highlight three areas of disagreement that I have with President Bush. Illegal immigration. We've got to stop the massive invasion from Mexico. I do not support the amnesty majority position, majority Democratic position in the United States Senate, nor do I support the amnesty of the president. We cannot reward illegals who come to this country by giving them a blue card, a red card, or a green card and saying you get a glide path to citizenship. We did that in the 80s, it didn't work. We did it in the 90s, it didn't work. And we don't want to do it in the 2000s because it won't work now. The administration and a majority on the Appropriations Committee, including a lot of Republicans, support increased foreign aid. Not me. I support decreased foreign aid to help the deficit. Big issues in Congress are like the Central American Free Trade Agreement. If you want to know why we've had some job layoffs in Pennsylvania, Danville, Martinsville, Halifax, and Mecklenburg, all you got to do is look at NAFTA, PNTR, CAFTA, and you can see why. I haven't supported those agreements. I'm not going to support them, and I don't care whether the president gives me a call, Karl Rove gives me a call, and he's never called me, by the way, Al. My position is still the same. On the war in Iraq, I do believe that we need to listen to those in theater, the commanders in the field. And I'm not one of those that say we should roll the white flag up tomorrow and get out the next day. I want us out as quickly as we can, and I want it in an orderly process. And I have been a long-time advocate of being free of foreign fossil fuel, and then they can do what they want to in the Middle East without us. My opponent would blame George Bush for Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath. Well, I can give you a great comparison. You got a mayor in New Orleans. You got a mayor in Houston. And when they were evacuating Houston, who would you want in charge when Rita was bearing down on the Gulf Coast, the mayor of Houston or the mayor of New Orleans? If you got the local people in charge that can handle a job, they can do it right. My wife and I are dog and cat lovers. We love seeing the mayor of Houston providing the animal carriers to get the animals out with the families. Did the mayor of New Orleans do that? No, he did not. The school buses were right there on the lot that could have carried hundreds, if not thousands, from New Orleans, filled to the gills with water because they didn't want to crank the starter and move the people out. It's a little bit of local responsibility. It's not all at the feet of President Bush. And I think if you'll compare what happened with Rita and Houston with what happened with Katrina and the mayor of New Orleans, you know where some of the responsibility lies. Al Weed mentioned veterans care. I've been one of the chief proponents of increasing veterans care. And how do you get the money? I'm not for increasing taxes. I'm for cutting foreign aid. And I've had the proposal in several years to slash foreign aid by different amounts and to transfer it to the Veterans Affairs category. I haven't been successful on what I've wanted, but we have been successful in each budget year of improving the amount of money that goes to veterans health care, and it's been like this. It hasn't been like that. Now, let's talk about MZM in Martinsville. I've never heard somebody so uninformed as Mr. Weed was just in his comments about that situation. He said I'd gotten nearly $100,000 in illegal contributions. Not so. It was about $46,000 that were straw contributions, but I gave every donation that I got that I could tell that was related to MZM, to charities around the 5th District. And you say, well, what about straw donations? I haven't heard Mr. Weed and the Democrats talk about John Edwards. He got about $45,000 in straw donations from law firms in his 2004 campaign, and I haven't seen the media yet focus on that either. So I'll bring that up. One of the law firms was rhymes with Tab Hunter, and the other one was Donnelly. And you can look them up. They've got statements about that. There's no indication that Senator Edwards ever knew that the donations were straw. If someone gives you, buys something from you, do you ask them where the money came from? If somebody gives me a donation, I don't go ask them, hey, where did you get the money to make a donation from me? And that we have limits at the federal level. It's $2,000 was then. It's $2,100 now. And let me tell you what, I didn't vote for the $2,000 limit. I voted for the $1,000 limit. And if Al wants to make an agreement right here today to limit all contributions from this point forward to no more than $1,000 apiece, I'll do it. But now let's get to his assertion that MZM got $15 million. Totally false. I don't know. He must be smoking something like what he's named for to come up with a figure like that. The maximum amount that MZM could have gotten was less than $5 million, and most of that was invested in Martinsville. Athena followed MZM, and they, this is a guesstimate. Now, I'd say they probably got $1 million or $1.5 million. In the city of Martinsville in Henry County, MZM paid $400,000 for a shell building there that had been empty for over a year. And in most types of deals like that, the localities will give shell buildings away, or it'll be part paid for with the state or part paid for with the Tobacco Commission. In the article in which Al Weed blasted me in Martinsville, he didn't read the next article where Mr. Hankins from the city said, well, the investment that has been put in the Foreign Supplier Assessment Center in Martinsville equals $4 million, and we won't have to pay anything on the investment part. Now, the jobs part, they were said they would have to provide 75 jobs, and they provided about 30. Right at this time, we don't know when the accounting is done whether any money will be owed by Martinsville to either the state of Virginia or the Tobacco Commission on that. They got Martinsville got $250,000 from Governor Warner and $250,000 from the Tobacco Commission. I submit very little, if any of that, will have to be paid back. And even if it did, the city of Martinsville has a $4 million building down there that's on the tax rolls of the city of Martinsville in the future, and they'll get more in taxes off of that building, even if they have to pay anything back. And he's not telling you that side of the story, but if he'll read that article that was with the blasting article of me where the city officials comment, it's right there. Read what Wade Bartlett said. He's assistant city manager. He's made that statement in the past. Let me tell you about some of the investments in Martinsville. The general contractor got about $350,000 out of it. He was from Martinsville in Henry County. The furniture that goes in that building, including for the auditorium that's in the building, is over $400,000. The paving the parking lot, and I think a contractor down in Danville did that. That was well over $100,000. The designers, the interior decorators, the drywalling, the people that came from the area to work, they spent in Martinsville and Henry County over $1.759 million, almost $2 million in Martinsville and Henry County. And if you add to that what they spent for, like, the climate control in nearby counties and the parking lot paving that I mentioned and all the people that were hired there, it was about $2.5 million of investment that went into the area. So out of the federal money, nearly every bit of it went right there to Martinsville and Henry County, and I submit that was good for business in Martinsville and Henry County, good for the people that were offering jobs in Henry County and Martinsville, and the payroll provided, my guess, now this is a guess, based on the average pay, which was twice what it was for the Martinsville-Henry County average, over $50,000, they got over $2.5 million. So the city of Martinsville and Henry County did benefit from them being there for a short time, over 2 years. But I am hopeful that in the future that this secure facility, which in that same article Mr. Weed didn't want to tell you about or missed, maybe he didn't read it. I might not have read it. I don't want to say, thank you. There were statements by the city officials saying this is one of the most marketable buildings in Southside, and if you go look at it and go see the inside of it, you'd see why that's true. Now, he says my earmarks haven't benefited, and I'll get him in the next 5 minutes, but let me tell you a few of the things for Charlottesville and Albemarle County, which he doesn't like, and these are legislative amendments that I've gotten passed. For law enforcement in Albemarle County, Greene County, Nelson County, the city of Charlottesville, several $100,000. For JABA, $300,000 for the senior program. For the Center for Government here, the Institute for Leadership over at the University of Virginia, well over $4 million. The NGIC, $7 million, and my list is still very long. I'll go over it all with you later. Thank you.
At this time now, Mr. Weed will have 5 minutes to discuss any of the subjects that was brought up by his opponent, Mr. Good.
I appreciate, Mr. Good, your concern about the sanctity of democracy in these forums, which is why you didn't want to flip the coin to see who would go first or second, but in the end it really doesn't matter. I should point out that there should be no FEC implications in the fact that Mr. Otto is not up here with Mr. Good and me, since he has not bothered to file with the FEC. So that makes him hardly a credible candidate, and I don't think it's worth your time to be listening to him. I'm glad that Mr. Good has made such a vigorous defense of his voting record. I hope that we got that word for word. And I'm sure he's opposed to amnesty for illegal immigrants because he makes that point whenever he can. I'm waiting for him to talk about the amnesty for the illegal employers who have hired these people. That may come out yet. The reason Karl Rove hasn't called Mr. Good is because, according to Congress.org, Mr. Good is in the bottom 5% of effective Republicans. Mr. Rove has more valuable things to do with his time. I don't think anyone doubts that the system broke down over Katrina, But I don't think anyone doubts either that George Bush did a good job in responding to Katrina. Mr. Good has had a wonderful time, a wonderful career almost, telling veterans how much he's done for them. And yet every time I talk to a veteran, they tell me about declined care, increased co-pays, lack of hours, lack of ability to get into a clinic. You can't have it both ways, Mr. Congressman. When you cut taxes, somebody has to pay. Right now, it's veterans. Now, on MZM, I'm delighted to hear Mr. Good's response to my assertions, and I apologize for being uninformed. This debate has been largely uninformed, since Mr. Good will only take questions from the press if they're in writing, so this may be the first time he's actually spoke to this issue in front of a large crowd. And also, granted, other people have taken straw contributions, but I'm not running against John Edwards. It's our congressman I'm concerned about. We do read the Martinsville Bulletin every day, online, and when we get it. If Mr. Good read the Roanoke Times, he would know that it's $15 million in earmarked money to both MZM and Athena. This would have bought a lot of body armor. And finally, how many of the jobs created by MZM Athena were local people in Martinsville? And how many people are going to be able to go to work in a highly secure facility that requires a top secret security clearance to work in when you need at least a year's notice to get a top secret security clearance? This was not a very good industry for Martinsville and probably not will not be in the future.
I want to mention one more thing on the list, Al, of the earmarks that the Agriculture Subcommittee on Appropriations has done. We believe in supporting the wine industry, and we've over the last 4 years have gotten over $7 million because we believe that the wine industry is good in Virginia, and I was very supportive of that. And that's just one on that other list. But I've got to respond to some of the points that he made. For him to say that you have to file with the FEC to be considered a credible candidate is not true. All that means is you haven't raised $5,000 yet. The situation at Hampton, Sydney a few years ago, the person wasn't even on the ballot, was a write-in, and that generated that. And your assertion about making someone raise $5,000 because they can be in a forum, I submit if they've gotten up enough petitions and have done the legwork of getting out with grassroots supporters and have filed the declaration of candidacy and the certificate of candidacy and met the standards of the State Board of Elections, that's what should count. Mr. Weed would say that I'm not for increasing. He said, am I for amnesty for the illegal employers? Absolutely not. He hadn't read the legislation that passed the U.S. House of Representatives. We increased the fine for knowingly hiring an illegal alien to a maximum of $50,000 per illegal alien. And as for Karl Rove making calls, Karl Rove doesn't call Tom Tancredo either. And he's wrong about the veterans things and what I've done. When I was on the subcommittee dealing with veterans affairs, it was my amendment before the Appropriations Committee that struck down the proposal to make an enrollment fee of $250 per veteran. And it also struck down the proposal of the Department of Veterans Affairs to double the copay for prescriptions. And that amendment did cost over $250 million, but we got that through, and I'm just putting that out as one example. And he asked about why the press, I want the press to send me the questions in writing so I can respond to them in writing. The Roanoke Times is wrong on the $15 million. And I sent to the Roanoke Times, they wanted to know was $90,000 in contributions over a 3-election cycle period a lot of money. I said, no, not when you put it in comparison with what some other persons have gotten in the House and in the Senate. Shelley Berkeley, over three election cycles, got $179,000 from MGM, which is the casino company. Hillary Rodham Clinton got $133,000 over a much shorter period of time than I did from Corning. And if you read the New York Times, you can see what all she did to promote Corning. I think it's a problem. I'm not saying she did anything wrong. I'm not saying Shelley Berkeley did anything wrong. She's promoting MGM Grand because it's in the district. And I support companies that are in this district and a lot right here in Charlottesville. Go over and ask Sperry Marine if I haven't been working with them on getting things that they want in the budget. And there have been numerous other ones right in this area in the defense area. One minute. But let's go back to some others. John Murtha got $144,000 over a shorter period of time than I did from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And he's worked hard for them and gotten earmarks for them. And I'm not saying he's done anything wrong, but he'd have you and the Roanoke Times would have you believe that $90,000 was a king-sized amount of money. But when you put it in perspective, let me go on down and read a few more on the list. John Murtha again, he got from Paul Magliotti Associates $103,000. And then Harry Reid, you know, he's the Senate Majority Leader. And I've only picked out Democrats. I could go down a Republican list and name a lot over 100, too. But Harry Reid also got more than $159,000 from MGM. It's important to get these facts straight because if you put them in perspective, it gives you the total picture. And in instances in the Roanoke Times, I haven't gotten the total picture. And thank you.
Virgil, what is your position on the current Senate bill dealing with immigration issues?
That bill is worse than nothing, in my opinion. I would not be for it, not going to vote for it. It has amnesty in it, and it provides a glide path to citizenship as a reward to those illegally in the country, and I can't support that.
Mr. Weed.
I think that the Senate bill is a good start. Let me quickly lay out my position on immigration, since I think you know what Virgil's is, that I, like Virgil, agree that we should secure the border. No nation is secure with a porous border. I, like Virgil, agree that we should seriously enforce the laws against hiring illegal aliens. My point about amnesty was retroactively, which is what his point about amnesty is. I believe also that we should make efforts to ensure that the Mexican and Central American economies develop faster. Those folks are coming across this border to look for jobs to keep their families alive, not because they want to try to learn English in Houston. And I also believe that we should raise the minimum wage. Very much different from my opponent, raise the minimum wage so employers would not have the opportunity to exploit American workers who can't afford to work for $5.15 an hour by hiring people who are illegal and have no voice. On those things, we may agree or disagree, but on amnesty or his position about amnesty, we differ dramatically. I do not believe it is amnesty when someone pays a fine and admits he is wrong any more than when you are speeding down the highway, get a speeding ticket, and go to court and pay your fine. That's not amnesty. That's paying your fine and getting right with the law. And I also believe that we as a nation will never be able to face ourselves if we undertake to deport 12 million people. Can you imagine what that would involve, the cost? Mr. Good hasn't dealt with the cost of that, both the moral cost and the fiscal costs of deporting 12 million people, the populations of Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Rhode Island, and Delaware.
Mr. Weed, what would be your position on a bill to create English as the official language of the United States?
A bill to create English as official language is probably foolish, just because it is our official language. No one can prosper in America unless they know English. I think that if we were serious about integrating people who have come here from all around the world, we would make serious investments in the kind of education system that would allow people who don't speak English to speak English.
I support English as the official language. If we do not adopt English as our official language and have that as the common unifying bond in this nation, we're going to end up like Canada, and that will be in like the situation now where you have the French-speaking Quebec. They've already got three referendums which barely failed in separating from the United States. Failure to adopt an official language will balkanize this country, and if we would adopt official language of the United States of America, it would help alleviate the cost. Mr. Weed says it's going to cost to deport the illegal aliens. Absolutely not. If you draw a line in the sand, and I say this to George Bush and the members of the Senate who voted for that legislation, if you draw a line in the sand and said, no amnesty, many here illegally would leave because they know they couldn't ride around the system then.
Mr. Good, would you reiterate for us what are the problems creating us in the United States by this illegal immigrant situation?
I didn't understand the question.
Tell us what problems this illegal immigration is creating for us.
The biggest problem is how much it costs. It costs over $70 billion per year. Unfortunately, the Mexican government has provided information to those who run across the border and telling you where to go to get free health care, where you can go and what you need to get by social services who are not going to do a citizenship check in every instance. It is a huge impact on our hospitals. Hospitals in California have had to close because they can't handle the flood. They know that if they go to the emergency room, they will be treated. If you want to be serious about the deficit, stop illegal immigration tomorrow night, and it'll go a long ways towards ending the deficit.
Mr. Good is a lot more expert on the cost of illegal immigration. In fact, he has spent that most of his career in Congress. I've spent a lot of time along the North Carolina border, and I just don't see the flow of immigrants coming into the 5th District. I must have missed it, and I must have missed the costs that our hospitals and schools are bearing. But it's not unreasonable to ask that we control this flow, and I agree with them on that. And I think that we ought to also look at the other side. You can't drive through this district. You can't drive through this city. You can't drive through this state without seeing people who are immigrants working in our economies. The agricultural economy of this district would have failed years ago if it weren't for Mexican migrants. If you care about our communities, you care about recognizing the reality that we have today and understanding that a lot of the cost incurred by illegal immigrants are the same costs incurred by low-wage workers who do not have health care, who do not have decent housing, who do not have any kind of child care. These are the costs that every low-wage worker in America incurs and passes on to us as taxpayers, and it doesn't matter whether they're here legally or illegally, those costs will accrue.
Mr. Weed, how do you feel about a possible solution of the illegal immigration of building fences along our borders? I mean, for the Enough on immigration. All right, that was the last one.
Please understand that people come across that very dangerous desert and that border because they can earn 10 times as much in America as they can earn in Central America or Mexico. What person in this room would not risk their lives to provide a life like that for their family? The fence, the wall, will not stop that. The only way we stop people from crossing the border would be something along the border. And even Mr. Good might agree that we could put these signs in Spanish that would say, if you come across, there are no jobs because we will fine every employer who tries to hire you. That'll slow down the flow of illegal immigrants. A wall and a fence is just a waste of money.
I support a fence. I think a fence would be an effective tool, but it's only part of the answer. You've got to increase penalties on employers, which our bill does, and which includes a fence. It's also, you've got to have local law enforcement stopping the illegals. And I would point out to Mr. Weed that most of the agricultural workers in the 5th District of Virginia are legal visa holders with an H-2A program. In addition to the fence, though, I cannot overemphasize how important it is to send a clear message, and this is where I disagree with our president. He needs to say loud and clear to Vicente Fox and to all those who are invading our country from the south, no amnesty. Do not come because we are not going to give you amnesty and most will go home.
Mr. Good, what are your thoughts and plans on to bring better jobs to the 5th District?
A number of avenues that we've been working on. I can take them county by county. The Halifax County Industrial Development Authority has needed some money to attract a business. We have worked on and gotten that for them. In Southside, Virginia, is served by the Institute for Advanced Learning at Danville. And working with Virginia Tech on that endeavor, we've been able to get over $20 million in federal money over the last 6 years for that, for a number of different initiatives to broaden the economic base of Southern Virginia. For example, they have a Polymers Institute there. We have a Sustainable and Renewable Resource Institute there, which I might add to Mr. Weed, we've been working on for 4 years, switchgrass and hybrid poplar into biofuel so the farmers and the agricultural businesses across Southside can go with the alternative fuel solution to our energy crisis. Those are just a few of the things that we've worked on. In Martinsville and Henry County, we have provided money for infrastructure so that you can attract new business and new industry to that area. We've worked this session on a water line from Patrick County through Henry County to Pennsylvania County, which will enhance Henry County by fees. How much? 30 cents. It will enhance Henry County by fees and enhance Pennsylvania County's attractiveness. We are on the verge in Southside, Virginia, on getting a lot of new and diverse industries. And I've been pleased to work with our local jurisdictions on a number of these. They are good people working at the local level, and I salute them.
Earmarks are not leadership. What's happened to the south side of Virginia is not something that can be fixed by buckets put under a leaky roof. We need legislative and long-term fixes, long-term changes in the way our economy is structured. MZM and Athena and Martinsville are a perfect example of an industry that started with earmarks. When the earmarks dried out, the industry flew away. That's not change. That's really just putting that bucket under the leaky roof. I am talking about using every resource of the federal government directed toward long-term changes in Southside, including developing hub zones, directing concentrated aid on trade-impacted areas, which once the retraining monies are gone away, everyone forgets about communities like Danville and Martinsville. Nothing comes from the government. It doesn't come because Mr. Gu doesn't go to Washington to work for a legislation. He goes to take a little bit of pork off the Appropriations Committee. In the medium term, higher education is a key to Southside. A new college in Martinsville and a research university in Danville will change that economy. And in the medium term, biofuels throughout the rural area will change the economy dramatically, create jobs. And who do you trust to bring a biofuels industry to Southside? Someone who spent all his life in farming, building a farming industry, bringing new technology to bear to create jobs, or someone who's been a small-town liar?
Mr. Weed, do you approve or disapprove of federal funding for stem cell embryonic research, and why?
I approve of federal funding for stem cell research because I believe it's important that we use the best science we can to save lives.
Question also to Mr. Goode.
All right. I would suggest to Al to look at my hub zone legislation, which would significantly help a number of jurisdictions in the 5th District. And I do not support federal funding for embryonic stem cell research on new lines. I support adult stem cell research, and I support cord cell research. And I can tell you right now, you can privately do all the embryonic stem cell research you want to do. Universities can do that. Private entities can do that. Investor-owned companies, pharmaceuticals, and others can do that if they so choose. But I do not support using federal tax dollars for embryonic stem cell research. And I'd have to tell you at this time, there have been a number of instances of beneficial adult stem research, and I've followed very closely the writings and comments of Dr. Dave Weldon of Florida, who has done extensive research on this issue. And I know of one instance where adult stem cells were utilized by a daughter, the adult stem cells coming from the mother, and that was helpful in her diabetic condition. And adult stem cells have also been helpful in some cancer situations and also some Parkinson's situations.
Mr. Goode, what can be done in the next 5 or 10 years to help our energy situation with respect to keeping the gas price of gas per gallon and heating oil at a moderate price?
The thing that I think we need to do most, as I stated earlier, is to be free of foreign fossil fuel. The Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iran wants to be, Oman, United Arab Emirates, Nigeria, Venezuela, all of them literally have us over a barrel. We have got to continue the efforts, like I mentioned previously, of blending hybrid poplar and switchgrass to make biofuel. And that's only one thing we can do. We've got to drill for natural gas in this country in more places than we do now. We only are drilling off the coast of Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. No other place in this country. We've got to expand our drilling in this country. We cannot forget nuclear power. Although I prefer renewable, non-polluting energies, I support wind credits, solar tax credits, and utilizing facilities like that in West Point where soybean is being turned into biodiesel. I know of instances right now where persons using strainers with diesel engines are getting
question to Mr. Weed.
Well, first we have to have a serious national debate about our energy policy. We have to pass energy bills that are not just giveaways to the big oil and energy companies. And we have to look at the fact that the United States uses 30% of the world's energy. That cannot continue. We can do conservation starting now when you go home. There are things you can do to reduce your use of energy. You multiply that by 300 million, and pretty soon you stop using much imported oil. All of the things Mr. Goode suggested will be a part of the equation. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I don't necessarily think that my view or his view on where we get away from imported oil will differ that greatly. The difference is whether we have a national focus on getting this done, whether we have the guts to take on the automobile companies and, frankly, the unions to talk about automobile efficiency standards. I think that we, as Americans, have to come together on this issue. The future of America is at stake. It is not just a matter of $3 a gallon gasoline at the Amoco station. It's about the future of this country as we understand it.
Mr. Weed, are you in favor of eliminating some of the restrictions that we now have on drilling in our own country, in the offshore drillings in Alaska, in the national forest? Are you in favor in giving up some of these restrictions and letting our oil companies do more drilling and exploration in those areas?
Absent the national debate and discussion I just suggested that we have on energy, I would not want to see ANWR desecrated by piecemeal exploration for oil. But I think that as a nation, if we look at the entire energy future that we are facing and we make a conscious decision to drill more and to drill in places we have not drilled, it ought to be consistent with an honest commitment to conservation, to honest a commitment to renewable fuels, a commitment to sustainable energy development. And until we do that, I don't think plunking an oil well here is going to solve our problem any more than plunking a gas well off the coast of Virginia is going to solve our problem.
Same question, Mr. Goode.
All right. Thank you, Fred. On drilling, I do favor drilling in Alaska in an environmentally friendly manner, and I know that makes some people mad. And I also favor drilling for natural gas off the coast of the United States in places where it's not allowed now. And I'm hopeful that the House and Senate can come together on that legislation and get an expanded number of areas for drilling for natural gas. Natural gas in China is about $2 per unit. In the United States, it's $8 per unit. We're going to lose a lot of plastics and other manufacturing if we don't do that. But now, let me say, Al and I have disagreed on a lot of things, but I agree with something that he said a minute ago, and that is the future of this country is dependent on us being free of foreign fossil fuel. If what they do with OPEC were done in this country, all of the OPEC leaders would be in jail. It would violate the antitrust laws, but they can sit over there in the Middle East and get oil out of the ground probably for about $2.50 a barrel, and they decide how to ship it out and what to manipulate not just us, but much of the Western world and much of the Asian world. It's the future of this country, and the future of the world is at stake to go the alternative fuel route, and I agree with Al on that.
This question is to Mr. Goode. Mr. Goode, are you in favor of allowing the free enterprise system to develop these alternative fuels on an economic basis or rather be subsidized by federal taxes?
Well, I want as much private enterprise as possible, but I support, and this is subsidization for a little bit. I support the hybrid tax credit. I support the solar tax credit, the wind energy tax credit, and I support some specific funding to projects like going on right now at the Institute in Danville to get that biofuel out, and they're close to setting up a manufacturing facility to generate this biofuel and to get it in the system. It is a national emergency. I don't think you can just say the federal government will, and I'm basically pro-free enterprise, but in this thing, we've done some things already. More things need to be done. I support the tax credit, which is government involvement. I support specific funding like that to the Institute for their efforts on this switchgrass hybrid poplar biofuel.
Question, Mr. Weed.
The National Resources Defense Council in 2004 published a detailed report called Growing Green Energy or something to that effect. What they said was that our technology is at the point where we can make cellulosic ethanol, that is some switchgrass or hybrid poplar or wood chips or manure for that matter. We can make it through any number of techniques, but we're not sure which is the most commercially viable technique. It would take between $1.6 and $2 billion in 2004 to build the pilot plants that would prove the technology that's going to make this conversion economical. There is plenty of investment capital out there once the technology is proven. That's an appropriate role for the federal government. And while $1.6 to $2 billion is not chump change, it's 10 days in Iraq.
Question of Mr. Weed, how do you feel about the increase in the minimum wage?
Well, I haven't seen one. What I've seen is Republicans playing with this as a political issue. I'm very much in favor of an increase in the minimum wage. I don't see how we can expect people to work and maintain families and have a chance at the American dream when we're paying them $5.15 an hour. It hasn't gone up since 1996. I'm told that if it went up as much as the congressional raises have gone up, it would be up to $6 and some change. And if you actually look at what $5.15 an hour buys today compared to what it bought in 1996, it's about $4 an hour. So if this is an absolute moral imperative that we need to raise the minimum wage, we also need health care for working people. We're not providing that. And until we put those two together, we'll never stop the flow of immigration, and we'll never change the economy of this country.
Question to Mr. Goode.
I get to answer that one, don't I?
Yeah, that's right. Same question.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Weed interjected congressional COLA raises into the answer on the minimum wage. I receive and give to charity, after taxes, federal and state, the COLA raise every single year. And I have a... That has been my policy since the first one was done. I can't remember whether it was 97 or 98. I continue that policy today. The minimum wage, I have voted for and against it. I voted against it when it was a standalone bill, when it was wrapped with something that helped small businesses, like the elimination or reduction in the federal death tax. I voted for it. The recent bill that passed the House extended a number of tax credits that are important to small businesses who are impacted by the federal minimum wage. And I voted for the extenders. I voted for significantly reducing the impact of death taxes on farms and small businesses, and in it was a three-year increase phase-in of the minimum wage, and I supported that package. If it is an appropriate package, I will support the package.
Question to Mr. Good. How do you feel about allowing American citizens to buy drugs from other foreign countries like Canada?
I support and have voted for the legislation. It was in amendment form on the floor of the House, but I've supported in the House Agriculture Committee to allow the importation of prescriptions from Canada, and I would certain other G8 countries, I would probably go along with that too. I think importing prescriptions, particularly from Canada, would create more competition in this country and would lower the cost of prescriptions here. That position, I will tell you, though, is vigorously opposed by pharmaceuticals and opposed by some who say that you can't count on the integrity of the prescriptions from foreign countries. My position would be those who buy drugs from foreign countries would have to know that it's a buyer beware situation. If you get something that harms you, your chances of getting anything to rectify that situation would not be good.
Question to Mr. Williams.
I would support that. I think it makes sense for us to be able to buy prescription drugs where they're the most affordable. But I would wonder why Mr. Good voted for the Medicare Part D that forbade the government, the largest purchaser of pharmaceuticals in the entire world, from negotiating for prices the same way the Canadian government negotiates. That would have a much bigger impact on our older systems, on all of us.
Question, Mr. Weed. Mr. Weed, how would you go about trying to encourage these millions of citizens who have no health care program at all?
Repeat the question, Mr. Terry.
How would you go about trying to encourage the millions of citizens we have now that have no health care insurance?
Let me tell you how I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't support a health care credit that requires that you earn a certain amount of income so you can put some money away in order to pay for the doctor bills when the time comes. If you don't have a middle-class income, you can't afford to do that. I wouldn't support a system that says any kind of government assistance to help us get a national health insurance is socialized medicine, or it's just Canada. Nobody wants that. We just decided we wouldn't mind having the drugs from Canada. I think we need a national health insurance program that provides Medicare for all. It will save us money. It will save our medical care system. And you all on Medicare who are getting your 11% increase next year, you're paying the costs of a broken system. And we're all paying that cost every time we pay a medical bill. We are the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have a national health system. There must be a reason why.
Question, Mr. Good.
I don't support a nationalized, socialized medical system like my opponent does. But let me say this. He mischaracterizes the tax credit program for U.S. citizens. You don't have to pay a dime in taxes to get assistance with your health insurance. It is called a refundable tax credit. That is like the EITC is now. In other words, the money that you get has to go for health insurance, but you do not have to earn any. You may have to fill out a form to get the refundable credit, and the refundable credit has to be applied for health insurance, but you don't have to earn income. Now, if you earn income and pay taxes, it would reduce your taxes. And I favor the tax credit approach, and I also support a bill that I've tried for several years to get passed, and which was pushed by 5th District residents, to have a checkoff on your income tax return. It would be a refund. You get a refund. You check off if you want your refund to go into the uninsured fund to help those who do not have any type of insurance. Not solve the problem. No way will it, but it would help. You could probably get $3 or $4 billion for that nationwide if we would adopt it and have no other checkoff. Virginia has the fund and it's gotten some funding, but the problem in Virginia, you have 15 checkoffs. You're competing with the game fund, Special Olympics, and everything else, and I think it should only be that one to help the uninsured.
At this time, I'd like to ask our President Don to come up and say a few closing words. Finally, in closing, I'd like to thank, on my behalf, I'd like to thank our guest here today. I'd like to thank you for participation. And remember, you notice I did not tell you what my name was because I'm not important. You are. Remember that. Don.
On behalf of the Senior Center, who are our host providing this very nice room, and on behalf of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia, I want to thank you for being here, and I want to thank our candidates for their fine performance in this presentation today. And this is an example of what the Senior Statesmen do. Our organization is dedicated to this kind of public forum, discussion of public events that are important for us as citizens. So, with that, I want to thank you for being here, and glad to see you again at another of our meetings.
You've been listening to a Candidates Forum for the 5th Congressional District of Virginia, courtesy of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia and the Virginia Podcasting Network. Please tell us what you think about the event by leaving a comment on virginiapodcast.net. Thanks for listening.